So, Rodney, thank you for joining me today. We'll start with your childhood, and you grew up in Farsach in the counties. And tell us what it was like growing up through the 40s and 50s, wanting to be a footballer, and then why a goalkeeper as well?
The thing was, what was there to do in the 40s and the 50s? My parents never had a car. My friend's parents never had a car, so we had to make our own sport. In other words, we was all ready for sport, and all we could do was play football in the village. And then I used to like to score goals, so I really started as an inside forward. But when I was playing for the youth club that Leicester City spotted me from, I was an inside forward, but the goalkeeper got injured, so I went in goal. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. So I thought, well, this is not bad, really, because I went in goal for one complete half, and I never had no running, nothing. Oh, it was lovely. I thought, well, this is just ideal for me. And from then on, the boy was badly injured at the time, so they asked me to play in goal the next week, and then it's carried on from there. And when I went to work at the sugar beet factory when I was 15, I went to the sugar beet factory in Peterborough as a messenger boy. And while I was in the office, the manager there, the office manager, he said to me that he would give me half a crown, 2 and 6 pence, which is 12.5p. He said that he would give me half a crown if I wrote off to Leicester for a trial. So I thought, blimey. And at the time, you know, there wasn't many old boys that didn't smoke in them days, which is wrong, really. But I thought how many cigarettes that'd buy me. So I wrote off for a trial. And anyway, one of the games, obviously I didn't know when they were going to turn up. And one of the games, at half time, this big tall man came along, white hair, Mr. Bromilo, and said what his name was, Mr. Bromilo, and said to me that he was a scout from, the chief scout from Leicester, and could he have my address and everything, because he wanted to talk to my parents. He'd seen enough for that one half of me playing in goal. So I thought, oh, good. Luckily for me, I had plenty to do that day, plenty of work to do, and I only let one in, really. So he came to see my parents, and that's how I got to sign for Leicester. In those days, there were no such thing as apprentice professionals. I went down on the ground staff. I had to help on the ground. There was me and Frank McClintock. You all know Frank. There was five of us all together, us boys, and we swept the stands and helped the groundsmen, and you know, we enjoyed ourselves.
And you didn't play too regularly when you first played for Leicester, obviously, when you signed professionally, but through no fault of your own, mainly because Gordon Banks was also there at the time. So what was it like practically living with an England goalkeeper and learning from him as well?
Well, the thing was with Gordon, he was the sort of lad that he didn't mind that I was only a young boy and probably was trying to get his place, which obviously I never got. Nobody went in goal when Gordon was fit. But anyway, Gordon and I really got on well, and because I hadn't got, I was only a young lad, and we went around with one another, the young lads who was on the ground staff with me, I used to then earn a little bit of money by going and babysitting for Gordon, and so therefore I got very, very well in with Gordon. So also, the good thing about it was, after everybody had gone in from training at Filbert Street, that's where Leicester used to play when I was there in the late 50s, we used to go out there and work our angles out. And I suppose, you know, that was a good thing, because he was willing to... We went out there with a ball of string, and we used to work this string around the 18-yard box, ready for when, certain players had come towards us with only us to beat. So Gordon and I learnt a lot from, but he was a good lad, and as I said, he was not a big-headed boy, and he used to get away with murder, actually. I suppose that was because he was an England international, and I was only a boy. But
And you moved to QPR in 1960, and you stayed there for 2 years. But you wanted to get out of London and move back to your roots. Why was that, and why didn't you enjoy it as much in London?
Well, being a village boy, as you know, I was born in Farset. And being a village boy, I didn't like London. And in those days, Shepherd's Bush was a tightly knit community where it got to the point where I just did not like London. And I didn't like the travelling. I used to come home most of the weekends. I learned a lot. To look after myself. But the point is, I was so pleased when Cambridge came after me.
Yeah, you talk about Cambridge, and you moved into a side in the Southern Premier Division 1, and so despite ambitions of getting into the Football League, you needed to get into the Southern Premier Division first.
I was signed by Alan Moore, who was one of the best managers, obviously, I've been with. Not that because Alan signed me, but if you think that when him and the chairman, Mr. Woolley, Abbey Tyres, came to see me, I was playing for QPR against Bournemouth. And that night, everything went in and I let 2 9s in my career. I had nearly 19 years as a professional footballer and I only ever let 9 in twice. One of those was at Bournemouth. And to cut the story short, really, everything they hit that night went in. And when I got home, I said to my wife, I said, it looks as if I should still be out of a job because I've just let 9 in. But lo and behold, the next day, the telephone went and it was Cambridge, Mr. Moore, the manager, wanting to sign me. And although I came down in money, wages, that didn't hurt me because I wanted to get away from London anyway.
And 353 Southern League appearances and cup appearances in total. Club record 7 out of 10 penalties saved in one season. I got some quotes from other people here who said about you as well. Best goalkeeper outside the Football League. All the feline grace of a panther. And you also won the Player of the Year, Fans Player of the Year 3 times. I'm going to touch on that relationship with the fans. Why do you think you had such a great relationship with them?
Well, one of the things, as most people who know me, I'm still here living in Cambridge. I'm still opposite the ground. And the point was the supporters made me so welcome and so did the club. When you come to a football club and you have to take all the, the rough with the smooth, the good part was that the club took to me. And I know I was, I did play quite well for Cambridge in the first couple of years, and I got Player of the Year, as I said, the second time. I think it was the second year of my being here. The thing was, Cambridge wanted me, and to want me was the biggest thing. So therefore, and it doesn't matter what we did after the games, we went with the supporters in the supporters club. We got to know most of the supporters, and it was a very, very good club as far as I was concerned because of what they said they wanted to do and they'd set out to do it. And everybody knows to this day how well they've done.
And a game which must have been pretty high up in your highlights when you look back at your time at Cambridge was the game against Cambridge City, the derby.
Yeah.
And 11,000 fans probably creeping onto the pitch at the Abbey and probably shouting a lot behind your goal as well. But tell us about that game and what the city was like as a whole when the two clubs were going head-to-head in the thick of the league.
Well, those days, they tell me, this is what they told me, I don't know, but when you think that they reckon marshals didn't get a lot of work done on a Monday because when Cambridge United played Cambridge City, the workmen at Marshalls, all spoke about the game. And also, if the buses went by my house, they'd got all the score on the window. This was before the game. And don't forget, there was only the one way to down to Cambridge before the Elizabeth Way was built. And you had to go to go to the match. You had to go at least 1.5 hours before the game because of the traffic jams, believe it or not. So you can tell the people was absolutely, it was absolutely marvellous. No, for days afterwards, everybody was talking about the games.
And you had your fair share of injuries over the years, especially as a goalkeeper and in the 60s. However, there was one time, which you told me, where you broke your leg, but still managed a sort of a half a round of golf the next day.
Well, we was playing Burton in the FA Cup, and it was at Burton, and the referee had blown his whistle for offside for their centre forward, and I went out the goal to pick the ball up to throw back because we'd got a free kick. And as he went by me, he just happened to catch my leg with his knee, and believe it or not, and we both went down, and I suddenly said, oh, my leg hurts me. And anyway, it was near half-time. So when we went in at half-time, I said to the manager, I'm sorry, but I can't kick the ball. I'm limping. It really hurts me badly. Come on, he said, we're in the FA Cup, he says. So what could you do? So believe it or not, I played all the second half with a broken leg. And anyway, when I got home that night, I went to Addenbrookes, and they didn't spot it straight away. And that night, when it was bedtime, my wife had to more or less take me to bed near enough on her shoulders because I couldn't get up the stairs. But anyway, the story is that 3 days later, the club took us golfing at Royston, and I started the first two or three holes, and then from then onwards, I was starting to limp, and I couldn't do it no more because, as you know, Royston's a very hilly golf course. And so I said I wanted to go back to Addenbrookes and have an X-ray, and I went to Addenbrookes, had X-ray, and believe it or not, I had a clean break just below the knee. That shocked me really.
Your time at the end of Cambridge United was tinted with a bit of sadness, purely because when you got the team promoted eventually to the Football League and the fourth division, you found out that you were no longer going to be kept on with the squad.
Yeah, I'd played for the 9 years for Cambridge, and I'd done very well. I'd been the first team when I was fit. I'd been the first team goalkeeper for the 9 years, and I really, really did set out. The club had said to me what they wanted to do in the first place, and I decided I'd back them. And I played with. I've told you about my broken leg. I haven't told you about when I had all those stitches in my eye. But anyway, I found out I was walking down Mitcham's Corner one afternoon, and for some unknown reason, their paper was sticking out of a letterbox at Lloyds Bank. And I don't know what made me do it. And as I walked by, I only pulled the paper out the letterbox, and there, right across the back page, was Cambridge United's long-serving goalkeeper sacked. I thought, well, I don't know. So I couldn't get home quick enough to tell the wife we were out of a job and I hadn't got no money and I'd got two children. And that's the way I was told, and I was very, very disappointed with that. And the thing was that we'd got promotion to the Football League, and I'd played in all those games, most of the games that season. So I was very, very upset.
And then, overshadow your time at Cambridge United, which was a time that you enjoyed and probably your best moments as a footballer and as a professional.
Absolutely. I was the best thing I ever did was come to sign for Cambridge United, because, like I just said, the supporters was absolutely magnificent, and they rewarded me with the Player of the Years. Which they did, and even now, after all those years, I can't go very far in town or down to the shops when somebody doesn't, say, oh, it's Rodney, and I have to start talking about football then. And luckily for me, I went in the fire service, which I'd done over 20-odd years in the fire service, so I only had the two jobs. And let's be honest, if you ask a boy what two jobs he'd want for his rest of his life, a professional footballer or in the fire service, I think he'd say, I'll have your two jobs. But I can assure you that everybody in my day enjoyed it, and we couldn't wait to pull our shirt on. And I really, really mean that. And people who know me know that I couldn't wait to pull my roll neck jumper on, the big old thick woolen jumpers on, quite good in the winter, but a bit warm in the summer.
And just finally then, Rodney, we'll talk about the modern game and your views on that. And is there anything that you potentially look back on your career that you compare with today? Are there any things that you wish you could do today nowadays? Perhaps though the difference in a football and how it's changed from being how heavy it was in them days to how light it is now, or perhaps it's the fact that, you know, nowadays goalkeepers are asked to play a lot more with their feet than you are. But is there one thing that you perhaps wish that you could have done in today's game that you didn't get a chance to do back then?
Well, the one thing I can say is that football is much, much faster today than when I played. I mean, if my fullback, for instance, went over the halfway line, then he got lost. He'd want a sat-nav to get back towards me. You know, it was that sort of football in those days. I think that the referee, for instance, today, it looks after the goalkeeper. I mean, I used to... you know, you could hit me, and you, as you know, people who know me know I'm only 5'10", and I used to stand on tiptoe whenever managers were looking at me. But anyway, I think today the ball never gets as heavy as it was in my day. On a rainy day, you was lucky if you could kick the ball to the halfway line, and that's not no sour grapes to today's footballers. The thing is with today's goalkeepers, he's got to contend with a swerving ball, which I did not, because you couldn't swerve in every old ball. And luckily for me, the last couple of years I played, I was playing with sort of football that they're playing with today, and I did really, really find a difference. It is much better, and you know, the only thing was also that in my day, the goalkeepers, I'm talking about goalkeepers now, he's got better gloves he wears today than I had. They're like a wash leather effect. And I mean, I didn't used to have gloves. No goalkeepers had gloves when it was a dry ball. But on a wet day, a lady in Leicester used to crochet them for me and Gordon Banks. She used to crochet these gloves for when it was a wet day. But apart from that, I do think football is a much, much faster game, and also I could get myself out of trouble and they could get themselves out of trouble by passing back to me and I could pick it up, whereas today they can't pick it up. So I'd have to be probably a better footballer, you know, and not a goalkeeper than I was in probably in those days. But I think today's game, the media has made it the game it is also, and I just hope that money doesn't spoil the game, because when you think what they were getting to what I was getting, I know you shouldn't go back to that, but let's be honest, I think money is spoiling it. And I used to think how brilliant it was for me to think that they were playing, working 7 days a week at Marshalls, and I was playing football and having most afternoons off, and go and play golf, or I went as a French polisher, believe it or not. And you think them blokes was playing, working at Marshalls, sometimes 7 days a week, and still wasn't quite taking home quite the same amount of money as I was. I thought I was very, very lucky.
Thank you, Rodney. That's a brilliant interview, and great insight into your time at Cambridge and your time as a footballer in the 60s as well. So thank you, Rodney.